Locomotion, locomotion, people, what's that sound? Loco, locomotion, what's shaking in your mountain town? Good evening, and welcome to Local Motion, where we go in-depth with local public affairs from around the KVNF listening area. I'm Jake Ryan. Today on the show, we'll be looking at organic farming, and really, what that means. There are a number of unique certifications that differentiate products from conventional farming. It can get a little confusing as to what the word organic even means, and what makes a farm certified USDA organic, and why some farmers choose different programs, or none at all. To figure all this out, I started off by talking to Steve Ela, the president of Valley Organic Growers Association, or VOGA, and owner of Ela Family Farms.
So I'm a fourth-generation Colorado grower. We have about a 100-acre farm, 80 acres in organic tree fruits, which include cherries, peaches, pears, plums, apples, but primarily focused on apples and peaches. And we sell most of our fruit over on the Front Range, but we also have a commercial kitchen where we process jams and applesauces and dried fruit as well. We are 100% certified organic. We started certifying in 1994, and I think we completed 100% certification in about 2003, and we've been 100% certified since then.
For decades, Steve says, organic labeling and certification was a nationwide hodgepodge, a patchwork of different organizations and programs.
Well, what happened before the National Organic Program got put into place was that there were individual certifying agencies. So the state of Colorado had its own organic program. Washington State had their own. Oregon Tilth had their own. California Certified Organic Farmers had their own. Back in Maine, there were several others. So there were organic programs. They just weren't all exactly to the same standard, and they weren't under one roof. So with the National Organic Program and the federal law, that put all the standards for the United States as one standard instead of each individual certifying agency having their own set of standards. For the most part, they were pretty uniform, but there were discrepancies between in some of the gray areas. One group would say this is fine, another group would say it isn't. And for buyers, then they would have to investigate, is this a legitimate certification program or not. So with the National Organic Program, it does put it as everybody knows what the playing field is, and the playing field is the same for everybody across the United States.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture created the certified USDA organic label in 2002. It was a huge deal. As Steve said, there was now a single program, a single set of rules to follow.
Yes, every year you have to submit an application for your certification. So we'd submit the application to the state of Colorado. And what happens now under the national program is the federal government doesn't actually do the certification. They delegate the certification to either private groups or state agencies. It's all under the same law, the same program, the same standards, but there are different certifiers. So, for example, we're certified by the state of Colorado. We could also be certified by California Certified Organic Farmers or Tilth, or there's some private groups out there as well. So, but they're all certifying to the same standard. And then at least once a year, they can inspect more. An inspector comes out and actually walks around the farm, looks at everything you're doing, looks at your record keeping, and they have the option to inspect at any time, actually. If they had any reason to suspect something shady was going on, they could just show up on your doorstep and say, hey, show us this today. In some ways it's a pretty rigorous program. There's a fair amount of paperwork, although for us, because we've done it so long, it's not an exorbitant amount. I mean, a lot of it's just good record keeping that you should be keeping anyways. We need to know what our production is for economics and for crop insurance and for other things. We need to, have a good paper trail for food safety. So to me, the organic standards aren't that onerous. It does take a little bit of time, but it's all good record keeping that we should probably be doing anyhow.
But with that little extra hassle, there does come some benefits.
So the benefits of being USDA certified for us are severalfold. One is if you're going to sell organic fruit wholesale, you have to be certified. You cannot put the organic label on it and wholesale without being certified. And we do wholesale. We work with Whole Foods. We work with a number of small retailers in the Front Range. We work with restaurants. So that right there lets us put that label on it. And in effect, that does two things for us. One, it gives us a price premium because there are organic price premiums on a lot of crops. But the other is that it gives us a niche. It puts us in a different market from the commodity markets of the world. For example, if we were going to sell an apple, a conventional apple, we're going to have to compete with Chile and Washington State and New Zealand and all these other countries. Whereas if we put the organic label on, we still compete with them a little bit, but it's much more of a specialty market. And what it's allowed us to do, at least on the Front Range, is create a niche for ourselves that somebody else can't fill. And it's literally what's kept us in business.
For most consumers, the price premium might be the first thing that they notice.
The price premium to me is there. One is we do have a little bit higher risk factor. If we do have an outbreak of something, we don't have the materials to come in and just solve the problem. We have to be very proactive. We have to think ahead. We have to work within a whole system. The other factor in there is that I really believe that our agricultural system today is heavily subsidized by our tax dollars, whether it's the farm bill and farm programs or whether it's wastewater treatment and, you know, drinking water treatment where you're having, you know, in the Midwest where they have to remove nitrates or pesticides from that water. Our tax dollars are paying for that. And if I'm a good organic grower, I'm not going to contribute to that pollution or waste stream. So to me, part of that organic premium is also paying for all the externalities that conventional agriculture creates. Again, I don't think the growers around here that's necessarily true, but in the big system, we all pay for those, you know, the pollutants and the soil erosion. We have to dredge the Mississippi, to get barge traffic up and down. And I think if we had a better system, the price of food might be a little bit higher, but it would also take into account all the other factors that we subsidize.
To look further into that, I took a trip to Don's Market in Paonia. Past the sliding door off to the right, you'll find the produce section. In the back of the market, behind the swinging doors and up the stairs, co-owner Don Holt is in his office. Amid the noise of fans and air conditioners, I asked him about selling organic food, selling it alongside cheaper conventional products.
Do you know when you started selling organic produce and meats and things like that?
I'm going to say it was around 95 that we began, 94 that we began to get into some of those natural and organic alternative choices, if you will, and it's been growing ever since.
Now, there is with organic food a bit of a price premium. Could you tell me about that?
Sometimes it can be way more expensive than, quote, its regular market alternative, if you will. But a lot of times you can find some that is much closer to what its market alternative would be, and those are the items and types of things that we've tended to have the most success with. Is they might sell for 15-20% more than the regular market alternative. Much over that, it seems to be a saturation point where people go, I don't know if I really want that.
Back with Steve, he says there are a few reasons people buy organic and pay that premium.
I think people buy organic food for several reasons. One is, even though we do spray, we have certain insects we have to control. It's the materials that we're spraying are very soft and very non-toxic to humans. And so one is in people's heads, it's a residue issue and a knowing what's on their food issue. The other that I see is we have a lot of consumers who are very environmentally conscious, and they want to know that their food is grown in an environmentally and sustainable way. And, you know, while organics aren't 100%, we have our warts too that we need to continue to work on. You know, it's not the perfect system. It's an evolving system, one that we continue to learn on. But I think it's a way of promoting both health and environment in your food purchases. And it's also because, at least in Colorado, many organic growers are smaller growers. It's a way of knowing your farmer as well. You know, that's not inherent organics. You can know your farmer without being certified organic, but yet it's another seal of approval that certain things have been done, that there's a certain program in place, and that somebody else is watching as well, and that we're trying to do a good job.
Not everyone agrees with Steve, or even agrees with organics in the first place. Agriculture in America is still dominated by conventional farmers.
Yeah, I mean, there's always people that think it's a bunch of hooey. But for the most part, around here, I guess people, at least in the fruit-growing community, while people may not agree with organics, they respect that this is what we want to do, and just as I respect that that's what they want to do. I think the two systems are coming closer and closer together anyhow. If you looked at how we grew fruit 25 years ago and the materials we used, that even the conventional growers have changed a much, much softer program now. And that's just, it just makes good business sense, and it makes good sense otherwise.
What's really interesting is that it's not just black and white, conventional and organic, USDA certified and not. There's also a group of farmers who practice organic methods, but don't get certified, who don't go through the process. Farmers like Mark Waltermeyer, who runs Thistle Whistle Farm in Hotchkiss.
Yeah, we're a diverse, small family farm. We moved here about 9 years ago and purchased this property not long after we moved here. We grow to organic standards, and we have vegetables, some small fruits, some fruit trees, but we don't market from those fruit trees, dairy goats, chickens, and a variety of educational programs that we try to integrate in with the production.
You said you grow to organic standards. Are you certified USDA organic?
Not this year. I have certified US. I have done the certified organic route a few times, but my markets don't require that, and I prefer not to go to the effort and expense of certifying organic if I don't have to. I certify naturally grown right now, and I have mixed feelings about that. I like the idea of having set standards that everyone needs to look at, and I like the educational value of that. I think it's a good thing to have an inspector come by, or another farmer in the case of certified naturally grown, and make suggestions, and there needs to be some accountability, because it often is to the financial advantage of a farm to have certification. And if it's to their financial advantage, then people are going to take liberties with that and claim to be certified when they don't follow the rules. And I think there has to be a process of making sure that doesn't happen. So there is a role for certification, and I see it mostly when there's a separation between the producer and the consumer. And the size of this farm and my marketing, I directly market most of almost, yeah, a good, I, the vast majority of what I grow, I market directly, either to a chef at a restaurant or to individuals. And so there isn't a separation, and they can ask me directly how I grow, what my standards are, and they can come visit the farm and see how it goes. So without the separation, they don't need me to certify. And I think the certification can actually be a barrier. People can look at that and say, oh, he's organic, so I don't need to worry about asking the questions. But I think organic is never going to cover all the issues that are important in how we run farms and how we employ people and how we treat the land and how we treat the animals and all the other things that are associated with it. I think it's much better to have a more direct relationship and more understanding of the particular processes that go on a farm, and certification can preclude that. So I think it's better to have more knowledge in the consumer, with the consumer, of what the growing practices are. So the closer they are to the farm, the better.
Mark runs a very different farm than Steve. His is only 15 acres. Where Steve has row after row of tall fruit trees, Mark has greenhouses and rows of tomatoes. He grows over 1,000 different varieties of plants, often planting things that have more personal interest than economic value.
So these are like wild strawberries. Same intense flavor.
Lemongrass, okahijiki, which is a Japanese pickling green, Mexican wild cucumber. They're about an inch long. They look like miniature watermelons, and they've got a good, crisp, sour flavor.
I've got French tarragon, Russian tarragon, and Mexican tarragon. So this is a kale broccoli cross. My son loves it. It's really gorgeous stuff. So we've got various varieties of habaneros in here. It looks like about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, at least 11 varieties, 11 more varieties of habaneros in here.
Mark says that he's not sure sometimes whether this is a profession of his or just a hobby. It all goes to reinforce the view that his farm doesn't need the USDA label.
We're not that large. We don't have that much produce coming off of here. So I can, with some scrambling, market it directly to the restaurants and to the individuals. So all the chefs of the restaurants, that's not entirely true. I do wholesale some of the stuff through some of the smaller wholesalers. But almost all the items that come off the farm, I talk to the chef and ask them what they want. And we talk over varieties and how to treat it and to make sure that it works as well as possible for them. And they ask about what's good. You know, they want to know something. They want, the chefs that I like to work with are the ones that are curious about new crops and new uses for crops. And so sometimes they'll suggest that I grow something I haven't grown before. And many times I'm growing something for one of my educational programs that is intriguing to them. And they ask, well, how do the Hispanic women who come up for the program use this stuff? And I'll tell them and then they'll try it out. So it's a deeper relationship than sending out an email with beets and carrots and cabbage on it. They can choose by variety and they can find things that they otherwise wouldn't be able to put on their menus. And I really like that kind of a relationship, and it keeps me interested in how these foods are used as well. The chefs always come up with new ways of using things that I wouldn't have thought of, and it's really fun to hear back from them how the item worked and how they used it and what the reaction of their customers was.
Like Mark said earlier, Thistle Whistle's certification isn't USDA. It's called Certified Naturally Grown.
Certified Naturally Grown, I like to think of it as more of a trust-based certification program, and I like that. Certified organic is, there's a lot of paperwork that goes into the USDA certification. It takes a good amount of time to fill it out. It's a complicated and expensive process. And when I think about why I would want to certify, I think that we can go back to the direct relationship I have with most of the people who use my produce. They don't need to know whether I'm certified or not. Rarely do they ask, and more important to them is that I don't use synthetic fertilizers or pesticides and that I treat my soil well and my animals are relatively happy. They care about that sort of thing. They care about the rules, they care about how the farm is run, but they don't care about the certification. So certified naturally, if I were to certify organic for those folks, I wouldn't see a difference. They'd still buy it just like they did before. I wouldn't be able to raise my prices. And I wouldn't pay back the time or the expense of the certification. So I don't have much reason to do it. I do like the idea of certification, though, and in some ways. And so I've chosen to use Certified Naturally Grown, which is a more of a trust-based certification procedure. So my inspection, when my farm is inspected, it's inspected by an extension agent from the county or another farmer who's also certified naturally grown. And it's they can pretty quickly see what my practices are. They can see that I do have plenty of weeds around the edges, so I'm not spraying them. They can, you know, they've got a pretty clear idea of what my practices are just by, you know, showing up on the farm and taking a look at things. And that's really all I need. It still is an expense, and it still can be a separation from the consumer, but I think that it's just an indication that I see it as more of an indication that I care about having at least some baseline standards on what your growing practices are, and exceeding them, I think, is important. And I don't think that organic standards of any sort, certified naturally grown or certified organic, the USDA certified organic, really are ever going to cover all the things that farmers need to take into consideration and that really matter in how they run their farms.
Still, Others in the North Fork Valley don't try for any certification at all. This is Lynn Gillespie of Living Farm.
Well, we have 212 acres, and we have sheep and pigs and cows and turkeys and meat birds and laying hens. We also produce hay, silage, and grains for the animals. And we do intensive raised bed gardening where we grow all our vegetables. We have a CSA and a restaurant and about 4 stores that we supply here locally.
She's not certified with any program, but they're hardly conventional.
I think what makes our farm different is we start with organics is in our heart. It's who we are. It's not a piece of paper, and it's the life we live. And the food that we create on this farm, we actually consume. So everything we eat comes off the farm as well. And I think the conventional farms, they're just making one product and they're selling it. And I don't know if they care so much about the quality of what they're putting out. But being it's what we eat, it's our food source too. I think that's where the quality really comes through.
Lynn's reasons for not getting USDA certified are very similar to Mark's. She's comfortable where she is now. Her farm is much larger than Mark's, but still has a dedicated market that's locked down.
I think at this point, our reputation is so good that people trust who we are and what we do. And the fact that I don't need a bigger market, that I don't need to certify. If I were to go, let's say, sell in Aspen or Telluride or open a new market, then it would probably be good to be certified. But I don't have any intentions of doing that. My goal is to feed my location, the people that are in my community, not to haul all the food, you know, to the rich communities and sell it up there. So we get a few less dollars, but I'm fine with that.
As I sat on the lawn next to Lynn and her old coon dog, she explained to me the main ideology behind what she does.
The organic philosophy to me is how you treat the land, how you treat the animals, how we integrate and leave the earth when we're finished with it. There's microbes and all kinds of critters that live in our soil, and they have as much right to live as we do. And I think it's part of our job is to take care of the soil. And to do that, we need to be organic. We need to not put chemicals on that hurt the microorganisms that actually create the nutrients that's in our food.
Mark, back at Thistle Whistle, has similar reasons.
I think it's important to me because I think that we understand very little of how soils and plants and water and air work together. I think we figured out how to manipulate them or put our shoulder to them and get them to work in a way that produces food for us. But we know very little about the full complexity of what actually happens when we put seeds in the soil and get them help them to grow. And I think that our attempts to change it are often pretty destructive. I don't trust that synthetic fertilizers and pesticides are fundamentally safe for me to be working with, to be produced, or for the soil and the plants and the animals that are all working together to produce the food that we're getting off the farm. I'm skeptical of that. And so I choose not to use them until I understand better how it all works. And I'm never going to get to the point where I understand how it all works. And so if I can do it without those things, which I can in this climate relatively easily, with a little bit more handwork and a little more effort and sometimes some losses to bugs or diseases that I might have been able to prevent with a chemical treatment, I can still produce great quality stuff without having to use those things. And I choose to do that because I worry about the potential effects that I can't see.
Steve is also focused on the health and future of the land.
For me, organic farming, well, farming in general, I mean, if you're going to be a good farmer, and especially we're perennial tree fruit farmers, so we don't think just in this year. I mean, we plant a tree and wait 6 years for it to really come into production, and it may have a lifespan of 20 to 40 years. So we're thinking multi-year regardless of what we do, whether we're conventional or organic. But to me, in farming in general, should be thinking multi-year and down the road, can we sustain the system? And so for me, the organic process, where we're using cover crops, where we're really trying to use mostly biological controls for insect and disease management, that's really important in terms of long-term sustainability for me. You know, there's things we can do better, yes, and those are things we're working on. For example, soil fertility, we still buy some off-farm organic inputs. I would rather be able to grow our own soil fertility. That's something we're working on. We're doing research projects on that. We're not where I want to be yet, but it's something, it's a goal. And so I think overall, we really need to be thinking of the future and multi-years and how we best can both sustain our family economically and environmentally over many years.
All three may disagree a little on the certifications, but they all see the importance of organic farming, as difficult as it may be.
What do you find are the challenges of organic farming?
The bugs. I've learned a lot about bugs, and it's not just eradicating the bugs. It's learning to work with them and their cycles and to, you know, keep them at a minimum. But, you know, without chemicals, you don't really wipe them out. So you got to just learn to live together, let them have a little and keep them at bay.
After a long day, do you ever wish you could just, like, spray something and be done with it?
No, I don't. I like the challenge. It's like, can I do this without chemicals? Because I could. I could go get chemicals and be done with it, you know, the next day. But it's like, how do I solve this problem without the chemicals? And I think that makes me a better grower and a stronger person, because it makes a lot of problem solving. So we get very creative sometimes.
But no, I mean, it's the complexity of it that fascinates me, and that's really what I'm interested in. I'm never going to be able to figure it all out and manage it, and nor do I really want to. I think that's part of that falls into that hubris category. I don't think we humans we don't even have a concept of how little we know, really, when it comes to soils and plants and those interactions. All I know is that it's much more complicated than I'm ever going to figure out, but it sure is fun trying. And that's really the beauty of it. You know, I can try all sorts of things. I can have all sorts of experiments going, and I can try to figure it out. And that's, you know, that's the process that I enjoy. If I just sprayed the damn things, that would just kind of ruin the experiment.
You can see on these trees, there's hardly any fruit on the bottoms, and that's frost. You know, there were blossoms there. They just got frozen. Most of the fruit's up higher in the top because cold air settles, warm air rises. So the top of the tree is a little bit warmer than the bottom of the tree. And that makes a difference. And we've got a wind machine that stirs the air, but even with a wind machine, it's still, you can only do so much. So we tend to grow a little bit taller trees than I would like to, just from a ability to pick them and ladders and things, but we know a year like this, that's where our crop is, so we'll take a little bit taller tree and spend more time picking them versus not having anything to pick.
Yeah, it seems like everything in this business is just trying to balance these different variables that, you know, a little too far to the left, a little too far to the right, and, you know, everything's gone.
Exactly. I mean, it's a dicey business. It's, you know, it's treated us well. We can't complain. We do it willingly. I mean, nobody makes us do it. But, you know, this spring there were, there were probably 7 nights that, you know, a degree lower and we wouldn't have the cherries we have. Degree higher, we would have been fine. We, you know, we ran our wind machines a lot of nights. We spend a lot of money on propane, but I'd rather spend that money on propane and end up with a crop and be sure of having a crop rather than gambling, well, maybe I won't run them tonight, and then get, you know, to this time of year and say, I wish I'd ran them that night. You know, the problem with tree fruits is we only get one shot a year, and if we blow it or make a mistake, we don't get to replant that crop. We just have to wait till next year. So as I've gotten older, I tend to be a little more conservative in my risk taking, but yet it's a risky business, and you just, you know, there are going to be years we're going to have frost. There's going to be years we won't have a crop, but we try and do the best with the years that we do have a crop. We try and do our best to, you know, plan for those poor years.
You've been listening to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Jake Ryan. Stay tuned for As the Worm Turns, coming up next.